Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, I think we've decanted for long enough. It's time to sit back and enjoy Two Sharp Reds with Mark Schwarzer and Ollie Giel.
Yes, welcome back to another episode of the Two Sharp Reds with myself, Ollie Giel, and of course, Australia's third favourite son, Mark Schwarzer, where we like to sit down, try a bottle of red wine, and then compare that bottle of red wine to a player, past or present. Mark, I'm fed up, to be honest. We've got to talk. I'm fed up. COVID's getting me down, man. 1 in 20 people in London. 1 in 20. That's insane.
Yeah, no, I heard that as well. And I said this to my wife the other day, and she was just like, wow, didn't realize it was that many. But yeah, it's incredible how it's mutated, how it's spreading now. And they're talking about us going into even a more stricter lockdown. How's that even possible?
What would that mean?
Like, I don't know. I think we're all going to be chipped. No one's allowed to move anywhere.
Well, it's funny you should bring this up. Now, we'll get to it a bit later on, but I've got a new feature that I want to bring in today that might cover off for some of these points that we're talking about here. So hold your breath on that, because there'll be some good topics to discuss a little bit later on. But it's all about the wine, and then it's all about the football. So let's go through some of the wine we're trying today. I've gone, you know what, because I'm in this, I'm just in a horrible mood because of the whole 1 in 20 situation. I've just gone to, you know, the local Tesco. I've walked in, I've gone bang. The Del Diablo, you know, right, grab it, £8, get in, get out, I'm done. So look, it's a good Merlot, nice and smooth, medium bodied, certainly nothing that you're not going to write home about. It, you're not going to put it in your diary as one of the great wines that you've tried, but it's tried and tested. I like it, and it should just be it's not going to let me down, you know, while I'm in this mood.
I'm surprised, actually, you've gone for a Merlot. I would have thought you would have gone for a real heavy Shiraz or something like that, because that is your favorite thing, your go-to. It's almost like your mother's milk, you know?
It's
for you to, you know, when you're feeling a bit down, a bit, you know, a bit of a lift up, you go to something that you feel safe with.
Speaking of the mother's milk, I'm going to have to send the mother's milk to you, because it's still sitting here. We're clearly not going to be able to have one together, are we?
I know, not for some time anyway yet. Unfortunately. But yeah, well, on that note, I've gone for another Portuguese wine.
Okay.
So I've gone for a Porta 6 2019 Lisbon. It's a real fruit bomb, and it's bold, juicy, jammy. It's chock full of ripe forest fruit flavors. Really easy drinking, approachable wine. And you'll probably even complain that it's too approachable and too easy to drink.
Okay, Mark, let's get stuck into the football. Now, you know how it's a bit of an unspoken rule here on the Two Sharp Reds that we try not to talk about things like VAR too much. It's like, oh, same old, same old. We've done well not to talk about COVID too much, but I want to talk about it now, because it gets to the point where you're thinking, at what point do we pull the pin? Do you think that it's a legitimate? I mean, we've learnt that Spurs will now play Fulham on Wednesday after the fixture reshuffle from the Tottenham Aston Villa game. I think then Fulham will then play Chelsea on Friday, I believe.
No, Saturday. Saturday now. So they were supposed to play on the Friday night, and they've moved it now to the Saturday because they're playing on the Wednesday.
Is it just not getting to that point where it's starting to become very difficult?
Now, listen, firstly, the whole manoeuvring of fixtures, moving around and all that sort of stuff, they have to be adaptable. They can do it at short notice now. There's no fans. There's no worrying about, okay, what are the ramifications of tens of thousands of people traveling? That doesn't come into play anymore. So the simple side of things of moving fixtures around, I think that's pretty straightforward these days. Obviously, TV has a say, but probably in this instance, they had very little say because of the reasons of being COVID and so forth. Talking about COVID and about, you know, the protocols that are in place, I think football's done a fantastic job up to a point. So up until probably about 2 weeks ago, they were doing a fantastic job at keeping the numbers low, very few infections. You know, we had that outbreak a little while ago with Newcastle, but it seemed to have been dealt with pretty well, even though it was pretty bad within the club and there's still a couple of players who are suffering from it. And let's hope they make a speedy recovery. But since then, we've kind of had the Christmas period, New Year's Christmas period. And what actually happens so often, and I've had it throughout my whole career, everyone gets labeled with the same description as a footballer. And if there's a select few footballers who step out of line, no matter what it is, we generally all get named the same thing. There you go again, typical footballers, spoiled, this and that, live in a different planet, blah, blah, blah. They're all the same. They're all stupid. They're all this, they're all that. And I think that's really unfair, because I think the vast majority of guys, even in general, do the right thing, are really good professionals, work hard and try and make the most out of their careers. There's always a handful that don't, and they spoil it and give everyone else a bad name. And the same thing's happening with COVID. We've had a period of time whereby people have been under, you know, strict restrictions, conditions. Footballers have to live a restricted life to such a large degree anyway, because of the profession that you're in. And I'm not begrudging it, and I'm not bemoaning it, and I'm not having a problem with it. That's what we chose to do, and we want to do it. And you take the good with the bad, you get paid an awful lot of money for it, and you should also be held accountable for your actions. I totally agree, but don't label everyone with the same name, right? So, but what's happened recently is, you know, again, they've stepped out of line, become complacent, maybe let their guard down because of the length of time that's gone on for now, that people have been having restrictions. Christmas time obviously has been a really tough time for everyone. And unfortunately, there's been quite a large number of footballers who broke the regulations and need to be held accountable for it. But that doesn't mean that every other footballer has done the same, because they haven't. But what needs to happen now is, because we've had such high numbers now of players and football, people within the football community have fallen ill of COVID, a lot of that was preventable. And it's only through poor decision-making from a select few of individuals that have had larger, greater consequences. We all want football to continue, or the vast majority of people want football to continue. It's an outlet. It's an opportunity for people to be distracted a little bit with the current state of play that's going on around the world, I believe. I don't believe they should be given any other sort of special treatment, but they have to go above and beyond the expectation. If we want football to continue, if they want to be in this privileged position, people have to make serious sacrifices, which the vast majority are, but a select few are not. So now it's time for the authorities, for the clubs, to come down really hard on people that step out of line. They need to be told, this is unacceptable. We all want, we all need, we all desperate for football to continue, but they've got to pull their head in and they've got to get back in line, and they've got to think of the greater good. They've got to think of the situation that's happening around the world, and see again, even more so in this time, what a privileged position athletes in particular at this moment and footballers are in. And they shouldn't and can't be allowed to take advantage of it, to let that slip. They've got to continue to shine a light, lead by example, and not take for granted the privileged situation they're in.
So one theory that's been floating around now, an idea to try and keep the football in action, was, I don't know if you heard the comments from Sean Dyche, who straight away said, you know, look, I'm not saying that footballers need special privilege because they are the last people that need this, but the idea of prioritising vaccination for footballers so the league can then continue, and then a portion of the money that's made because the league has been able to continue then gets put back into the NHS. What are your thoughts on that? It would certainly ruffle a few feathers that, you know, they're prioritising, you know, fit 25-year-old athletes to be vaccinated, you know, before the vulnerable, but there's a good theory there.
Listen, there's going to be an enormous amount of resistance to that suggestion. And I also understand it. And there is a very valid point to say no chance. And I actually believe that they can go up the line a little bit, mm-hmm. but not right now. The vulnerable, the elderly, the unwell, the people on the front line, you know, the medical staff, the police, all those different organizations should be prioritized before any athlete gets an opportunity to have a vaccination. Football, the game itself has had a system in place that has been effective, has worked. It just needs to be tightened. It also needs, there needs to be very clear messages to the players, to the staff, to the football in general, that they need to adhere to the restrictions. And if they don't, there's serious consequences for those who don't. I don't think they should necessarily jump the queue right now. No, I think football is important that it continues, but more importantly is to save life. And the vulnerable and the elderly, the vulnerable, the ill, anybody who's vulnerable to this horrendous virus needs to be protected first and foremost.
Mark, let's talk actual football now. Wild weekend of the FA Cup. I mean, you know, aside from that, I saw my boys' crew, you know, they had a 3-0 lead against Rochdale at halftime away from home. They end up drawing 3-3. You know, it was a wild weekend and I couldn't pick what was going to happen next. There's so much that we could talk about. Two games in particular, though, I think sort of caught the imagination of people. Derby, now they lost to Chorley. Now, do you know anything about Chorley?
Well, no, they're a non-league football team.
Yeah.
On an extremely small budget.
Yep.
And should have no right, let's be honest, in like from a professional perspective and a level of football that they play and the quality of footballers that they have, and trying not to be disrespectful towards Chorley, they shouldn't be beating Derby County.
No.
However, that's the magic of the FA Cup. And if you underestimate your opponent, if you necessarily say they disrespected them, Derby, but by virtue of the team that they picked, to me, either there are two elements of it. They're either gone, you know what, the FA Cup for us is not important, and it's a game that we have to fulfill, but we don't necessarily, it's more of an inconvenience than anything else. So therefore, they sent a team that they just want to fulfill the fixture, and if they do well, then what a bonus, and if they don't, then fine, we're out of the competition that we don't really want to be involved in at this particular moment in time, which is then Chorley's advantage, and it's their win, and they thoroughly deserved it. And it's fantastic to see them through to the fourth round of the FA Cup. I'd wished, like everyone else, that fans were able to come back, because the FA Cup, it's difficult for people to understand unless you've been to an FA Cup fixture, and understanding the magic of lower league teams playing against the far superior teams on paper, wage, budget, everything else, and have no right to beat them really on paper. But the magic of the FA Cup takes place. And like I said, teams underestimate them. Teams take them for granted. They just go out and go, well, we're just going to turn up and win the game almost. Players are disgruntled that they have to go and play a game against a lower league team when a lot of the first team players are rested. And they're putting a team together that has hardly played any football together, and it's a tough fixture, but they still should be winning them. So hats off to Chorley. Absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely love to see them go through, as with Crawley beating Leeds United. Absolutely fantastic. You know, Leeds United, for me, reeked of a club that didn't want to be in this game, this competition. Felt that, you know what, their priority, and I also get it, Leeds United's priority is to stay in the Premier League. That is their number one priority. So they have prioritized that over anything else. And so in the end, that advantage then falls to Crawley Town, and they took advantage. They took that olive branch that was handed out to them, and they made Leeds United pay. And they should really, you know, enjoy the moment, because it's very special.
Now, Leeds fans, though, I get the sense that normally we're talking in the last 16 years when they've been trying to get back into top flight football, they're pretty happy to go out at this stage in the competition. But I can't see a world where they get relegated now, right? So, you know, they're not going to go higher than 10th. You really don't think they're going to go any lower than 17th. So a nice, decent cup run would sort of, you know, tick off a pretty good season for them back in the Premier League. So I sort of get their frustration, because also it was a decent team they brought out. like when you looked at it, you're like, come on, Kessié in goals, like he's got to be doing better than 3-0.
Yeah, listen, I'm not the biggest fan anyway. I don't think he's particularly that great a goalkeeper. I think he's done okay for Leeds United at times. I thought on the weekend he let in a couple of poor goals. But then the team were poor. You know, they lacked any intensity. A Leeds United team that you normally expect to see that are on the front foot, and they, you know, they absolutely go at the opposition and they try and prevent them playing out. You know, they were disjointed. They're nowhere near played anywhere their best. And you know, Crawley Town were very positive on the front foot, took the game by the scruff of the neck, took their chances, and deserved to win the game.
It's a shame that Big Harry Kuehl's not managing Crawley.
It is, yeah, it is. But you know what?
Would have been good.
At least he's back in the business of management, and he's old and athletic and doing a pretty good job there. But back to Leeds United, I'm sure there'll be a lot of Leeds fans that'll be very disappointed and upset about their loss. But there'll be also quite a few of them will be kind of, you know, okay, we can accept that so long as we kick on now in the Premier League.
Yeah.
You know, Leeds United have been a source of frustration at times because you watch them in the Premier League, particularly early on, and you go, this team is brilliant. This is such an entertaining, entertaining team. Football has been brilliant. The way that they've just shown no fear, they've gone at teams. But it's kind of died off a little bit. And, you know, again, they play such at a high intensity. Every game that they play, having one less fixture or competition to worry about will be a blessing in disguise for them. They need to make sure that they now make the most of the Premier League and make sure they are assured. And what they can't do is think that they're safe, that they're going to stay in. They've got to get the points on the board sooner rather than later. And then once you get to that 40-point mark, the sooner you do it, the sooner you start building upon that and working your way further up the table. And if Leeds United were to get to 40 points pretty quickly, then they could easily finish that top half of the table because of momentum alone. But if they stutter along the way, it could be a real long second half of this season.
One last game I want to talk about in the FA Cup was Spurs at Marine. Now, I will put my hand up. I've never heard of them. They've got one big celebrity fan, though. Do you know who that would be?
No, I don't, actually.
Adele.
Oh, there you go. See, all I can think of Marine right now is just something that came over from the weekend was obviously not the fact that if you knock the ball over the back garden of someone, one of the residents that live by, that there's a board, there's a thing, a list on the wall or something like that to tell you which door you need to go and knock on, which is quality.
Sensational.
Yeah, absolutely quality. Is that Michael Owen's comments that if you're a substitute on the bench for Marine, you're a submarine?
Submarine, yeah. I mean, does that not have Schwartzy written all over it? It's kind of
a dad's joke, isn't it, really? Let's be honest.
So good. I saw a great photo. I think Gareth Bale ended up retweeting it, of a guy watching the game from his bedroom window. And he just took a picture and goes, I'm looking at Gareth Bale from my bedroom window. This is insanity. How cool is that?
But you know, that's the credit has to go towards Tottenham and Jose Mourinho. Because Jose Mourinho, what he never does is underestimate an opponent. He never disrespects an opponent. And I think even more so when he's playing a far inferior opponent, he gives them the utmost respect. And it goes to show the seriousness of which he took to this game. You know, the players that he put out there and the way that he made sure his players were up for the game, because it's a tricky fixture. Yes, on paper,
totally.
You know, Tottenham should win this game hands down. But it's the environment, it's the surroundings. You know, you saw the pictures of that game, the stadium. Yeah. Some of these guys could have easily have gone there and gone, what am I doing here? Like, you know, I play in the Premier League, I played internationals and I do all this and I'm playing in basically people's back garden.
Brilliant.
Which is the beauty of the FA Cup, which I'm sure I'll say in another couple of times on this show today. It's magic. It's absolutely magical. And I would have loved to have played in that game because it reminds you as a kid growing up, you know, what it was like to first play football and the excitement that you got. And again, I'll say it again, I'll probably say it again in the show, is that the fact that there were no fans there, what a shame.
Yep.
Because that being a packed house, can you imagine people in their back gardens. It would have been like, you know, people had probably had barbecues in his back garden and watching the game. That was the middle of winter. Who cares? It just would have been insane to have watched.
Won't be long, I promise. Back to Ollie and Mark in just 15 seconds. If you enjoy Two Sharp Reds, though, make sure you search the Gegenpod wherever you get your podcasts. David Wiener is joined by thousands of games of experience both on and off the field. It's a great listen. Gegenpod, the Gegenpod. Okay, back to Two Sharp Reds.
Halftime drinks here on the Two Sharp Reds as I just take a nice sip of my beautiful Del Diablo Merlot. And I saw this morning, I missed it last night, Mark, but did you see Matty Ryan on Instagram at all?
I did, yes.
Posting praise for his fellow teammate in Steele after he made four saves in the penalty shootout in the FA Cup against Newport.
Did you see his saves?
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
What did you think of them?
Oh, brilliant. Unbelievable, Jason, right? Steele was a young kid coming through at Middlesbrough when I was still there. And I remember the goalkeeping coach at the time, Stephen Pears, he was kind of his prodigal son. I used to call it his son, right? So I used to say, oh, you know, it's your love child or whatever it is, you know, having a bit of a joke with him. And because he always, wherever Stephen Pears went, Jason Steele would be very close behind him. He was like literally following him around like a lost puppy. So, and he said one day, this guy's going to be, he's going to be the next Paul Robinson, because Paul Robinson at the time was the number one for England.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then once Jason got to an age where he was able to drive, he turned up to the training ground, and on his number plate on his car, he had Borough number one.
No.
I'm telling you. So he was like, I don't know, what, 17 years old or whatever it was, 18 years old? And he had Borough number one on his number plate. And people come up to me going, have you just seen what he's coming? Have you seen his number plate? And I said, no, what is it? And they told me, and I just laughed. And they go, are you not like upset with that? And I go, I don't care about personalized number plates. And you know what? As far as I'm concerned, you can dream as long as you want, mate. Well done. Have a dream about it. There's no chance he's going to play ahead of me. And that was it.
You should have got Borough number two on your car. That's what you should have done.
I know. Back to Jason Steele's performance in the penalty shootout. Listen, four fantastic saves, I have to say. You've got to give credit when credit's due. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant saves. What a penalty shootout. I think it was King in goal for Newport County. He saved two penalties. And
the boys were on. Yeah.
And Brighton, one of the Brighton players, hit the post and another one. So they missed three, Brighton, and Newport County had four saves. So I feel for King, the goalkeeper of Newport County, the fact that he saved two penalties in a penalty shootout and still was on the losing side, that's not great, is it, either?
No, it's not at all. Mark, it's time to just swap out our Merlots and bring in some Weissbiers. I'm going to just get my Stein and my pretzel, because it's time for a Bundesliga update. It's been a while since we've gone out to Deutschland. And there's been two things I need to talk about that we need to touch on. Haaland, 25 goals, 25 appearances in the Bundesliga. He's a freak.
I can't believe you started with Haaland.
No, I'm saving the best till last.
Yeah.
Come on.
All right. Yeah, Haaland, listen, phenomenal.
Let's roll through Haaland quickly.
No, we'll stay with Haaland. Phenomenal. And yeah. You know what the thing about Haaland is? Not only is he a goal machine, right? Not only is he phenomenal in goal. His contribution to the team, other elements of the team, the way he works, the way he wins the ball, and breaks the opposition down. He tries to win the ball back really quickly. He sets up players. The way he actually even starts play. I mean, if you see his first goal on the weekend against RB Leipzig, he's dribbling into the Leipzig's half. He takes on about four or five players, weaves and darts and weaves around them, keeps possession, plays the ball out wide to Jadon Sancho. Then at that moment, he makes the run to the far post. Sancho whips in a great ball. Haaland's on the end of it. Header at the far post. You know, phenomenal. Okay, his second goal was a tap-in, but his contribution is phenomenal. He's already seen as a real leader of that Dortmund side. He's been there for a short period of time. He's a young player. He's like 20 years old. You know, they've got Marco Reus on the side, Julian Brunt, Matt Hummels at the back. You know, real season internationals, World Cup winners, you know, Bundesliga winners. You got Haaland there, who's not won anything of any kind of note at the moment, but what a talented player he is, and what amount of how important he has been, and what a signing he's been for Borussia Dortmund. Insane.
Okay, so let's move on to what we're all here for. There was something that came out of Germany that, I mean, clearly by your itchy fingers that you had just before, desperate to talk about Schalke, who have broken their horrible losing streak. They've won 4-0 against Hoffenheim, which means as I just take my beanie off, I'm going to put on my Tasmania Berlin hat because our awful record continues as my boys, Tasmania Berlin.
And they were desperate to keep hold of it, weren't they, Tasmania Berlin? Absolutely insane. I mean, where do you even start? I mean, Schalke, I thought for all money would have been on them to break the record, at the very least equal the record. Because obviously they'd lost in the weekend, they would have equaled the record. They're going 30 games without winning in the Bundesliga. They went up over an entire calendar year without winning a single game in the Bundesliga, which is just horrendous. The fact that they sat up last season was insane. I mean, it was based on the fact that they started the season so well. Under David Wagner, they were in the top five up to sort of like around the Christmas period of time. And it wasn't until after the Christmas period and then the break happened and COVID, they went on this, they spiraled out of control. And they continue to spiral out of control. Financial problems, huge, huge financial issues. One of their best players, Weston McKennie, they loan him out. They didn't even sell him. They loan him out to Juventus. Goes to show you how much of a problem they've had financially. They've had internal fighting. They've had issues with players' discipline. Ibisevic signed from Hertha Berlin in the summer, didn't play a single game and had massive falling outs. And basically, they cancelled his contract and he was able to leave the club. What could go wrong went wrong. Yeah. They've sacked, since David Wagner, they sacked another manager. I mean, from what I hear, they're paying exorbitant amount of money on two managers they just recently sacked that they haven't been able to pay off because they haven't got the money. They're paying them off at the moment monthly, their salaries. So massive, you know, I mean, huge.
And 4-0 too as well, just quietly. A good 4-0, like a good 4-0. Win.
They played against Hoffenheim. Hoffenheim have lost four out of their last five games. So they, again, another team that started well. They beat Bayern Munich early on in the season. They were flying. Ex-teammate of mine, Andre Kremovic, is their star performer, leading goal scorer in the Bundesliga for Hoffenheim in their history of the club. So, you know, he's been brilliant for them, but they've hit a brick wall and they're spiraling down towards the relegation positions. But huge, huge performance. And of course, Matthew Hoppe, the American, young kid. They speak very, very highly of him. He's 19 years old, scored a hat-trick. So pretty insane. I mean, listen, USA, what a
pumping them out, aren't they?
Talented young players that are coming through. Absolutely brilliant. And maybe Australia needs to look a little bit that way and see what's going on.
It's a shame for them that Davies was a Canadian born, not if he was just slightly more south of the border, that'd be a serious team. Imagine that.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of German football, Mark, tonight, it's a Greenwich Mean Time. There's going to be a live question and answer session with one Mesut Ozil. Hashtag ask Mesut. Now, I wanted to put this to you, and I'm going to actually tweet these after. I want you to ask three questions to Mesut. What would you like me to ask him?
Any three questions to Mesut Ozil.
I should also say he said in the description he wants to talk about the past, the present, and the future. So it seems like nothing's off topic.
Where did it all go wrong at Arsenal? Where does he think it all went wrong at Arsenal?
I like the he, yep.
Does he understand why people would question his commitment to the team when he was playing?
And then one more.
And does he believe that he could come into this Arsenal side and make a difference?
Do you think he could? I think he could, you know. You look at some of the, and not so much, if we were to do this sort of pre the last five games, you know, because Arsenal have been a lot better. They lacked that just creativity, it felt like. It just, there was, you know, no but goals.
I don't think Arsenal necessarily, yeah, they did definitely lose, they lacked creativity prior to the last four or five games, right? So the other question was they also lacked commitment and intent and, you know, like the I suppose the aggressive nature of the game. They lacked commitment, right? Mm. So of those things that I've just said, they're not quite a high number of those words that I just used that would be questionable about Mesut Ozil, or what people have questioned in his character and his makeup over the years.
Yeah.
Commitment, you know, desire, you know, I suppose aggressiveness. He doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Commitment to the side, you know, his aggressiveness on the pitch.
Your first question here, where does he think it all went wrong at Arsenal? Where do you think? Was it when he signed his new contract? Was it midway through Emery's reign?
It's too easy to point your finger at when he signed a new contract and he's kind of like stopped playing. I don't think Mesut Ozil changed one bit when he signed his contract. I think it was exactly the same Mesut Ozil. I think the signing of the contract, listen, I don't begrudge Mesut Ozil for one second about signing a new contract. That's Arsenal's fault. Mm. That's the people who were at Arsenal, in charge of Arsenal, that signed Mesut Ozil on that contract. It's very easy afterwards, when things don't go well, to point the finger and go, he's on 250 grand a week and it's his fault. And it's a joke that he's on that much money. And what has he delivered? It's too easy to say that, right? Because nobody held a gun to his head and said, you have to sign this contract worth 250 grand. The club have to agree. The club also believed that he was worth that. He was that had that much value. I think it was a knee-jerk reaction. The fact they lost Sanchez. Sanchez said, no, I'm not signing. Basically, he was saying, you have to sell me. Otherwise, I'm walking out in the season for free. So they did. Mm. They sold him. And what a dodge of a bullet that was, right? So what could have happened was they could have had two players on that sort of wage still at the club and probably not playing. Could
you imagine? And Aubameyang wouldn't have been there either, because obviously the money raised through Sanchez, you know, went
That's
to that.
Right. Absolutely. So where would Arsenal fans... How do Arsenal fans feel about it? They're much happier where they are right now with the fact that Sanchez left and they've got Aubameyang. Okay. Is history repeating itself with Aubameyang? I don't think...
Settle down.
No, but I don't think it will. I don't think it will. Aubameyang's a different type of player. And there's no doubt for me that you know, he's already shown. He started scoring again. He is committed. His work rate, I don't think, is necessarily questioned. Yeah, on the odd occasion, you could say, did he work hard enough today? He wasn't on his game. But that goes with every single player. But in general, I think he's a top class striker he's a top player. Mesut Ozil, I think the mentality, the idea of the way they want to play football has evolved and gone beyond Mesut Ozil at the club. And the reason I say that is so the very basis of how Arteta wants to play, Emery wanted to play, high intensity, closing teams down from the front, which you have to do. Any team has to do these days. Even the lowest teams in the league have to work together and have to close down, and you can't have any passengers.
Yep.
And too often, Mesut Ozil, the way he plays his game, is a passenger. His work rate is not enough. And I don't think... And then what actually happened was maybe the fact that he was criticized for not contributing in that aspect of his game, the other aspect of his game then suffered. And he was no longer, not only was he not contributing in closing the opposition down and trying to win the ball back, but working as a team, but then the creative side of the game went, because he wasn't contributing on that aspect anymore. So therefore you're carrying a player. And with Mikel Arteta, when he first went to the club, my understanding is that Mesut Ozil started from scratch again. And he had an opportunity to prove his worth and his value to the side. And Mesut Ozil, I think Mikel Arteta, on observation and training, saw that it wasn't a player that was going to be able to play at the level that he wanted to play at, in terms of work rate, commitment to the side, helping back out in defense, keeping in shape, sticking with a player if he needed to, in defense. You know, playing his part. Mm. So therefore, he finds himself on the outer again. So what do you do? Do you start to go, well, it can't be the manager's fault. Sorry, it can't be the player's fault. It's the manager's. Well, they've had three managers.
Yeah.
And Arsene Wenger was the only one that stuck with him. And that was possibly even detrimental to Arsene Wenger in the end. Because Mesut Ozil let Arsene Wenger down on many occasions as well.
But that's all we've got time for here on the Two Shot Reds. Good episode.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't mind saying so myself.
Yeah, listen, someone has to say it, so why not be you? And you know what? Sometimes it's nice just to the two of us. You know, the last couple of weeks we've had many guests on. It's been fantastic, very insightful, very interesting, some unbelievable stories, some unbelievable journeys for some of the guys that we spoke to recently. So it's nice also just you and I. You and I to have a chat.
Yep.
Talk about
go back to our roots.
To our roots, have a bit of a catch up. Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it allows you to try and be a little bit more creative.
I agree.
Because the last couple of weeks, you've kind of almost been on, you've been on paid leave almost, haven't you?
It's a paid leave, yeah. I suppose so. Well, I don't want to get, you know, you guys are, because you pick who comes on, you know, you reach out, which is fair enough. So there's already an assumed connection there that I don't want to get in the middle of. So
no, I just want to sit back and, that and I appreciate that and I respect that, right? But you know what? You can't always be that shy boy in the room, mate. Sometimes you've got to step up and, you know, be a little bit more open and a little bit more, you know, have a bit more, let's say, just
a bit more spunk about me. So I need to be less like your shy Chilean wine that you had last week and more like your Portuguese red today, which is more of the approachable wine.
Absolutely. I think you could learn a lot from this bottle of red wine.
Go on.
Yeah, I really do. I think you can learn a hell of a lot from this one. It's juicy, it's jammy, it's chock full of ripe forest fruit flavors, you know, which I think you are pretty fruity, let's be honest. And I think you're more approachable the more you know you. But from afar, from the beginning, you're quite reserved.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit more standoffish.
Interesting.
I think you're very sensitive as well. Yeah, so like I was saying, I think you're also a bit of a new age guy, a bit sensitive.
Yep.
But once you get to know you, I think you're definitely a lot more approachable.
And so you're comparing this wine to me, are you? Is this what's happening?
Yeah, I kind of was a little bit then. Yeah, but
yeah.
I'm not going to use it. You. I mean, listen, to be perfectly honest with you, I should dedicate this wine to you because it reminded me of you straight away. I'm going to dedicate this wine to you. Chock full of ripe forest fruity flavors, which I said already, you're fruity.
Yeah.
You are approachable. And you're just too easy at times. You're too easy.
In what context?
Yeah, exactly. I just leave that open to the imagination. And this is a drink at home on the sofa at a party. Oh God, wouldn't we wish for a party? How much would you give to be able to have a party these days?
Have a Thomas, absolutely.
Oh Jesus. Or alongside a hearty casserole. This wine is perfect for any situation. So and I think that pretty much sums up you at this moment in time.
Now that is beautiful words there, Mark. And I also never thought, you know, when we do the comparisons, I never thought we'd ever compare a bottle of wine to Tilford Zebra's unbelievable winger from the years 2008 to 2011. Some of the great assists. So it's brilliant to see, and I really appreciate that. Really do. So I've gone for the Del Diablo Merlot, which we addressed at the start. Pretty basic wine, good wine. Certainly not going to win too many awards, not going to write home about it, but it is reliable, trustworthy, and just a really good wine. Smooth, medium-bodied, exciting flavours, and aromas that bring out the best in whichever food you've paired it with.
Okay.
So the words there, nice and smooth, this player. Not so much smooth personality, but smooth in his style. Likes to, feel like when he's on the ball, glides. You know, he's very smooth. Now, medium bodied, I'd say small bodied, really, but medium in terms of, you know, compared to a tall fella. I've actually met this guy and I've got, I want to say 5 centimeters on him, which is pretty, saying something. Very exciting though. The exciting flavors, very exciting flavors. And the aromas that bring out the best in the food, I want to say with that, he brings out the best in some of the people that he's around. So I don't think he necessarily gets some of the plaudits that I think he probably deserves. But he does like to bring out the best in the people that are around him. So I've gone for Manchester City's Bernardo Silva.
Oh, yes, he is. He's a bit of a
vertically challenged. Yeah.
Just tiny figure. Very intelligent guy. Speaks, I think, 6 or 7 languages. He's speaks English really, really well. Adapted very, very quickly. I think he's a really good player. And I'm surprised. He's getting a bit more of a run in the team now. He kind of gets runs in the team. He does really well. And then all of a sudden he gets rotated, then finds himself on the outer again. really strange how Pep Guardiola deals with him, actually. Maybe he's a case of he's one of those players that, not that he's happy to be out of the team, but he kind of probably doesn't give him any grief, Guardiola. And so therefore, he's an easy one to turn to if you need to substitute him, leave him out of the team because you want to bring in another player that maybe is a little bit more delicate to deal with.
He's very lovely, so I can't imagine he'd ever pipe up too much. And you'll like this, he's got family in Adelaide, of all places.
Has he? There you go. Pretty interesting.
Bizarre. He brought that up and he said, yeah, I want to go there and surf down at Henley Beach. How does Bernardo Silva know what Henley Beach is?
Just tell him to watch out for the Great Whites.
Yeah, I think it's that would be a post-football sort of operation, I think. Good stuff there, Mark. Well, would you like to do your outro?
Okay, if I must. All right, then. Jeez. I mean, I carried the show the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Carried. You're going to go with carried?
Yes, I carried the show. Let's be honest.
Carried. Not okay. Carry. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, listen, it's been great fun. Great catch up, you and I, for first time in some time now. Very much of a shame we still can't catch up and won't be doing so in the foreseeable future. However, very much enjoyed it. And it's a first. I dedicated my wine to you. So you got to feel pretty happy about that.
Well, I've always wanted to compare one to you. I'm just too scared. So now that we've broken the mold now and I feel comfortable.
The gloves are off and every opportunity for you in the future at some time. But don't do it next week because that would be too predictable, all right?
Yeah, no, don't worry. Yeah. I'll sleep on it. And also, don't worry. It's going to be good. Like, it's not going to be, you know.
But listen, you don't have to try and suck up to me now, mate.
No.
Save all that, right?
I'm not going to say that the wine's going to struggle, you know, kicking the ball. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that the
players
can't clear. You know, I'm not going to say it.
Ouch. You know, you can go off someone really quickly. And actually, you remember that I just dedicated you that bottle of wine?
Yeah.
You know what? Sod off.
Okay. On that note, cheers, Mark.
Cheers, mate.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.